Let's
Blog
do it.
Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's Empowerment Saturday, 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your main man, Marvin Rome, and a group coming to you live. I got the crew with me today. We got a great show. We got Dr. Boots, Dr. Five, Fit Series, Women in 20, and so much more. Oh, yeah. It's no better love. Welcome to Empowerment Saturday. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Got Dr. Bruce here today, Brother George, Willie Lynch, Kwanzaa, and much, much more. We want to thank you for joining us today. And we'll start off with the tenets of the NAAEA. That's the African American Empowerment Association. And that is the peace concept. We're talking about peace in our community, peace within ourselves, our lives, our minds, our hearts, and our spirits. And so we start with peace, and that is a political agenda, politics, economics, athletics, health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. That first P is politics. We have to have a political agenda, right? Focusing on what we need to do politically. And then we have to have an economic agenda, talking about economics, money management, fiscal management, and being able to manage the resources inside of capitalism. The A is athletics, which is health, wellness, fitness, and nutrition. You have to understand the importance of the A and the peace concept, taking care of yourself, having a good, healthy diet, walking, getting away from the processed food, and taking care of yourself. Next, we focus on culture and relevant cultural programs that help us to become better, more inspired, more empowered, and more of ourselves. And lastly, chin up, chest out, becoming powerful individuals who can think and emote for themselves. And lastly, it's a comprehensive education that really help us to become the best people that we can be today and every day. It's the peace concept. So join us as we continue to drive our membership where we can support the institutions that define our own reality. And we'll have to stand back in a moment. We'll be right back.
Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing. But we must unify. Let's not sabotage ourselves. We should not look as to what we can't do. We can do all things. We can do it. And so we got to quit trying to mimic other races and be who we are, original kings and queens, and make a difference.
I like that.
Right here on earth.
That's right, brothers and sisters. Make a difference right where you are. We have to have agendas. And we have to have opportunities created for ourselves where we can create and define for ourselves institutions that define our own reality. But we have to do the work. And that work requires us to be diligent and to be positive, to be peaceful, and to be productive as we continue to improve ourselves. And now, without further delay, it's my favorite segment of the show. It's the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment with Brother George coming up in just a minute. As we say, oh yeah. Oops. My bad, Brother George. Oh yeah. Come on.
Do it. Take it. Rock it.
Bring it. What?
What?
Right here.
Come on.
Hey. We're not going anywhere. We ride
Brother George, welcome to the show. How are you,
sir? Yes,
sir. Welcome, welcome.
You're doing fine, brother. I love that introduction by DMX.
All right. All right. So bring it, brother.
Well,
we right
brother.
Here. We ain't going nowhere on this Saturday. We right here listening to you,
yes,
and Dr. Bruce in just a few minutes as well. What you got for me?
Yes, sir. Well, today's principle from the Inclusive Sapa is Umoja, which is unity. To strive for and maintain unity in the family, community, race, and nation. Umoja. According to the traditional African perspective, every living thing comes from the same spiritual source, and therefore everyone and everything is equally deserving of respect. When we have the realization that all life is one, we begin to open our hearts to others and we receive blessings in return. We can see that it is our best interest, that is in our best interest to hold the best interest of all at heart. We understand that what we do to another, we do to ourselves. And so we are always careful in our relationships to respect of life. Man, that's a powerful statement, brother. Today, with the Willie Lynch segment, and the purpose of the Willie Lynch segment is to get us out of the state of being a mental slave that we were placed in. The purpose of the Willie Lynch segment is to get us out of that and begin to think once again the way that we did when we were rulers of empires. Now, today's book that I'm reading from is called Great African Thinkers, Volume 1. And Volume 1 is based on Sheikh Anta Diop. This book is edited and done by Dr. Ivan Van Sertima. I'm going to say a little bit about Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, and then I'm going to read a few of his responses from an interview that he done with Dr. Charles Finch, who is another highly regarded historian of Afrocentric information. There was something both unreal and audacious about the impending encounter. We were about to meet the man, Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop, who must be considered the pharaoh of Afrocentric and Kemetic studies, whose daring and inspired scholarship in Egyptology, African linguistics, political theory, African history, and anthropology is certain to reverberate through the centuries. Now, Sheikh Anta Diop is one of the major reasons how we know that the ancient Egyptians were black, that the Egyptians were black, period. And that a lot of the different African empires, such as Carthage and Hannibal, were also black. And we learned that through Dr. Sheikh Anta Diop. Sheikh Anta Diop also created a process by which melanin could be measured in the skins of mummies.
Brother George?
Hello, can you hear me?
Brother George?
Oh, no, we lost the signal. We lost the signal. Are you there? Hello? Brother Mark?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Okay.
I'm here. Go
yes,
right
sir,
ahead.
I can. Okay, well, I'm going to go back a step. Check out the DIOP is one of the primary reasons why we know that the Egyptians were black African people, that the Carthaginians, such as those under Hannibal, were black, because it's a lot of history that's written that implies that these people were of European descent. And Dr. Shekinah Diop, colleague, Obenga, when they went to the conference of UNESCO, they proved beyond the shadow of a doubt of this evidence. And so that's how we could walk around boldly and say that these were black people. Now, during the interview with Dr. Finch, Dr. Finch asked him, how did you happen to write Civilization or Barbarism, which is a book he wrote? Civilization or Barbarism is for me a kind of summary of all my works. And in it, I try to examine the theme of progress in social scientific studies. And it is for that reason that I took the theme of anthropology and cradle of humanity and showed that ensemble of discoveries give a much clearer picture of the past, that Africa is not only the cradle of humanity, but that the other races, particularly the white race, is behind the black race when one is speaking of developments in early Western Europe. By the same token, I also took the theme of evolution of societies to show that even the Romans have something in common. There, too, I believe, is a certain rapport on the philosophical plane. I try to tie together as much as possible the African element in Greek philosophy with original African philosophy. His book, Civilization of Barbarism, was very deep. Now, this is the second question that he was asked. Can you explain your two cradle theory, the northern cradle and the southern cradle? Dr. Diop's answer. At this point in time, sociology is promoting a theory that black culture was inferior to Western culture, inferior in fact to all cultures. Even the more advanced sociologists subscribe to this concept. For example, the matriarchal family, with the spirit of the mother dominating, was considered inferior to other cultures. However, when we study the different cultures and trace them back to their cradle, we see that this is ridiculous. And that is why I had to study the whole of African culture in the African cradle and study for the first time with a new penetration and precision that which the Europeans had not given to us, the ethnology of the West. I believe that it is through this continued effort of comparison and study that the proper light can be shed on the primary social structures of humanity. Now, Dr. Shekinah the Diop, like I said, they're causing the pharaoh for a reason. And he did a lot of research, and he proved a lot of different things. Now, there was another historian that also had proved quite a few things, but he was contemporaries with Shekinah the Diop, which is J.A. Rogers. And between he and Dr. Diop, I mean, that was a powerful influence on proving our presence in the world and our contributions to human civilization. And so that's my segment, brother. If you don't have any questions for me, then back to you.
Thank you, Brother George. Always knowledge is power. As always, knowledge is power. And now for our empowerment question of the week. Brother, why is this information so critical to where we are right now in the 20th century, 21st century? Yeah.
Well, brother, I used to tell people back in the early 2000s when I was, you know, present in the school system, you know, working with the football team at Hiranko and the track team at Huguenot, that the next great challenge for our people would be over who did what. Because historically, when we look at the history books and what we're taught, it's like all these European scientists did all these things. And it seemed like that the scientific revolution took place, you know, like a couple of hundred years after the conquest of the Moors in Spain. And they said they burned all their books. But it's me and a lot of other scientists that don't believe that they actually burnt those books. But what they did was, they studied our information, they mastered it, and then they came out with all these theories that really had already existed, if you knew anything about time. So for our people, we definitely need to learn this information, because they're trying to keep it away from us by blocking certain books. And one of the books, I'm sure, is Civilization of Barbarism by Dr. Shekinah the Diop. And there are many more. Anything that deals with the proof of what black people have done for human civilization, they're trying to block those books from our children being exposed to them. And so it's very important that we learn this information from whatever source that we can get it from.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Yes, sir.
You're welcome.
We need it. We need it desperately. Thank you, brother. Brothers and sisters, whoever is within earshot, now is the time that we educate ourselves. Now is the season for growth, politically, economically, socially, culturally. Now is the time that we break the shackles mentally and physically and emotionally and begin to put ourselves in a position where we begin to challenge ourselves to grow in areas that will allow us to flourish, allow us to become the best people that we can be, that we can prepare and pave the way for the next generation. And that is up to us to do that work. That work cannot be done by another culture. That work cannot be done by another community. It has to be done by the African-American community to help us help ourselves. And we must do that collectively, we must do that individually, and we must do that as a family. But that's the work that needs to be done. Join the Empowerment Network. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. And so now we will do a little bit of housekeeping. 845-277-9250 is the number to call. Slido is in effect today. The number for Slido today is 313-0018, slido.com, 313-30. 1-877-927-9250. We're looking at part five of Telling Our Stories with Dr. Bruce Bridges. And we're going to see if we can get Dr. Bridges in here right now. In the meantime, let's see. I don't see his number. All right, I'm going to go to a 919 number that I see up here. Y'all don't know. All right, Dr. Bruce, is this you?
Hello?
Yeah, I'm trying to find Dr. Bruce. Is this Bruce? Somebody else? 6337. Hopefully we'll call you as we go through the call-in line. All right, let me see if I can get him this way. I don't see Dr. Bruce on here, Brother George. So, in the meantime, Dr. Bruce, if you're listening, call me up or let me know what's going on. In the meantime, we're coming out with our next episode or edition of the Peace News Magazine. And so if you don't mind, Brother Booker, I'd like to bring you in so you can tell the people about our Peace Magazine. Dr. Bruce is running a little late. And so if you would, we got another episode or edition coming up of the Peace Magazine. Brother Booker, you there?
Yes, sir. Brother, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, sir. Thank you for letting me pull on you right now.
I'll just say peace to all the brothers and sisters who's in the sound of my voice. And on the newsletter, of course, peace. We're putting this together now. You know, Brother Marvin, you know, I forgot that it's going to include a continuation of Dr. Rogers' story that he wrote in the first
issue.
Remember, we didn't complete that, and we said that would be continued moving forward in the next issue, and we're definitely going to do that. And then Brother George, and I'm sure you will have some input as well, to express what you want to put in there, and I got a piece I want to put in there that we're going to share, and hopefully we get some good, I mean, not good, that's a bad word, we just get continued support and advertisers to help us further our distribution efforts for the piece. And if you've given everybody the address and information they need to submit articles, if they got an idea or anything like that they want to see published in the piece, we can do that. You know,
I like that, Brother.
Yes, sir. Just get it. I mean, open it up. It is. And everybody needs to know that. Just open it up. And it's like peace, like anything else, love. And it's about us, not me. You know, not we. It's all about us. And this is us. We just need to communicate, you know, take advantage of it. And, you know, I had the fortunate opportunity in my lifetime to work in communications professionally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then key things you learn that I've learned over the years when it comes to communication is effective communication. We must be effective with our communication. And that communication must be two-way. And basically just meaning, effective communication is meaning we understand each other. You know, that's all it is. We understand each other. And then two-way communication, meaning is back and forth. We're not only just saying things, but we're listening. You know, and we have to do that with each other. And just to get this I'm going to be a little, I guess, arrogant right here and say, but this knowledge and wisdom that's on the program every week and in newsletter and so forth, we got to spread it, and that's communication. You know, that's getting it out, sharing it with each other, and understanding and understanding the communication so we can move forward. And I'm going to save this to later, brother, which is my goal. My intention all along was to save this until you brought me in, you know, later on the show after Dr. Bruce, to just share with you, because I'm sure Dr. Bruce would like to hear it as well. I got a comment on one of my Facebook post, my recent one, from a student, former student that I work with at Armstrong in the Freshman Academy. And and I'm gonna say her name because I mean she said it on Facebook, and it was she wrote a comment, Nilayla Christian, and you know her, right? And she commented on a post I made, and I'm gonna share it later because it was one of them posts where, although none of us, including myself, Dr. Brewson, and you and Brother George, we're not looking for accolades or you know recognition and that type of thing for why we do things we do. We do the things we do because we know they're the right things to do, and whether I do them alone, I'm gonna do them. Whether anybody comment or call, or I'm gonna continue to do what I'm doing, what you're doing, what Brother George is doing, what we're doing. We're gonna continue to do that even if we have to do that alone. But when you get someone who make a comment. Like this young lady, and she in her early 20s, she's just a few years out of high school. It really lets you know folk are not only listening and reading, but they are understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the key because we can't move forward in our efforts and our communications if we're not understanding what we're hearing, you know, what we're saying, what we are communicating.
Right.
You know, we have to help understand it. And this feedback let me know. It made my day to have a young lady her age, background, and so forth, like all of us. I'm going to share it with you later, brother. I ain't going to share it right now. If you bring me back later on, I'm going to read to you what she actually said. Okay? And
just in the meantime, we got the Peace Magazine. Right, Brother Booker has years of experience. He is the first. Go ahead and tell him about your editing background.
I was the first black editor of the largest newspaper in the Navy, a paper out in San Diego, California, with North Island, called the North Islander. And obviously I caught hell in that position. And that was something I was not aspiring to do. Just happened. I found myself in there because – you know, as all of us do, brothers, it's not unique to me. You find yourself when that light goes off in your head and you wake up and you realize I'm a man and I'm a black man in this world and I'm in this position. And then at that time I realized, you know what, these folk don't think I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they think I'm a dummy. And for a while that bothered me. But then I realized them thinking I was stupid was to work into my advantage. You know, continue to believe I'm ignorant because now you're underestimating me. And so I was in those positions. And then from there, you know, I went on to motion picture scriptwriting school at the University of Southern California. And the reason I went there because they were trying to get rid of me. You know, and again, they thought I would fail. You know, I was the second black journalist in the history of the Navy to go to that program. And then from there, I left and came to back to D.C. and was working at the Pentagon and, of course, ended my career in communications as the first black director at the Virginia Housing Development Authority ever. And still to this day, I think I'm the only black director they've ever. No, black man. There was a sister there that her and I started at the same time, Pearl. So it was and all along, this was not my intention to have any of the jobs I had. It just, you know, things fell in place and I looked up and it was like, okay, you know, you're going to do it or not. And I always remembered where I came from, brother. You know, like we've heard Dr. Cruz say numerous times, always remember where I came from. Always straight up say, I'm from Gilpin Court. And folks, oh, man, you from Jackson Ward. I said, no, let's keep it straight. I'm from Gilpin Court, which is in Jackson Ward. There's a difference.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So I've never forgot that, brother. And regardless of all the things I supposedly achieved, and that, you know, because like several other folks have said who were so-called first, that's implying that I was the first one ever capable of doing it, which is not true.
Right.
You know.
Okay.
So, no. You know. Yes, sir.
Okay. So, again, we got the Peace Magazine. It was Wisdom, now it's Peace. We got an edition coming up. We got a Dr. Rogers special for you all listeners who have been with us for a long time. Dr. Rogers was a regular on the show, and we have his writings. And so we have a series that we're doing with him as well. So we got that coming up. If you want to advertise, because we need advertisement in order to get the subscriptions out to you as well. So support the Peace News Magazine. It's a great reading, right? It's education. It's all of the things that we want in the peace concept, right? And as we continue to build, we'll have more departments coming along as well. So thank you, Brother Booker, for that and for your support and all the information that you will continue to work on and share with our community as we continue to grow ourselves. And now it's time.
Thank
you,
brother.
Dr. Bruce in the house. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you so much. So 845-277-9250 is the number to call if you want to get in on the call line today. And also we got Slido in effect as we bring in Dr. Bruce. Again, the Slido number is 313-3018. We need to hear you out there. Come on, talk to me today. I can take you both ways. You can get on the line or you can talk to me on Slido. Either way. All right, we got Dr. Bruce Bridges coming up. And y'all know how we got to bring him in. Shake it with me, y'all. Come on. Oh, yeah. Dr.
Bring it.
Would you? Would you bring it, Dr. Bruce? We're not going anywhere until you tell us something powerful today. How are you, sir?
Tired, brother.
Hey, tired but steady. Tired but steady.
Tired to happen, right. The tired helping another good friend moving and all kinds of stuff, but I'm here, brother.
All right.
So maybe we can hear from some of our callers today. Maybe they'll call and ask me something. Don't work me too hard today. Maybe they'll
call
in.
All right, let's see what we can do. 845-277-9250. Talk to Dr. Bruce today. He needs to hear from you. I'm going to turn it over to you, Dr. Bruce. We got part five of your life story. So
can you remember, Brother Martin? I know you go back and listen to the program. Where did we end up last time? Do you recall at all?
Oh, we got some feedback up in here somewhere. See if we can get the feedback out.
Somewhere.
Yeah. Okay. I think we got it. All right.
Yeah, okay.
I just think that you were in your college days. Right?
Okay,
I think
that's where we were too, right?
College.
We hadn't gotten out of that. But anyway, go ahead, huh?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. And then as you were evolving into who you are now.
All right. And as usual, you know, I don't like to do a lot of talking about myself, but you said that we're going to, as Dr. Maxwell
Dr.
said,
Bruce,
we're going to tell our own
toot
story.
Toot your horn.
Yeah, I just text him, too. I hope he got my text. All right. Yeah, so anyway, we were talking about, I was a student at North Carolina Central University, just during the Black Power Movement and in the early 1970s, and the professors there, most of them really tried to have some kind of black consciousness. They did, because that was the climate. That was the order of the day, and that was what was happening. That was a trend. And so many of the professors, especially in classes like sociology, where you could easily talk about it, when you talk about the ghetto and people's lifestyles and people's social kinds of issues and history classes and classes of that nature, you could definitely talk about what was going on in the country at the time during the Civil Rights Movement. Many of the teachers that I had gone to school with H. Rapp Brown, had one professor who had gone to school with Stokely Carmichael at Howard University. And so that was very good. And so we did receive a pretty good dose of black culture and black heritage at North Carolina Central University. It definitely was not what it should have been, no question about it, not what it should have been or what it could have been, but it was more than most people would have gotten, especially going to some other schools, I believe. And then after graduating from North Carolina Central University, I received a scholarship to go to work on another degree, master's degree at the University of Cincinnati in Cincinnati, Ohio. And, of course, Cincinnati, to me at the time, was a much, much, much larger city than Durham, North Carolina. And recall very clearly traveling from Durham, North Carolina, traveling west, and then west with up through Tennessee, and then up through West Virginia, Virginia and West Virginia, and on up into Ohio, and going through those mountains there in Ohio for the first time. I hadn't seen the mountainside like that, and so that was quite an experience too. And Cincinnati, of course, is in the southern part of Ohio, and I was thinking it was a big city, and people were kind of into what was going on, but I found out that they weren't as culturally aware as I was or as conscious as I was. Brothers and sisters were wearing the gold teeth and the star in the big teeth in the front, and wear Jerry curls. That's what was big. Jerry curls were big during the time. Brothers and sisters were wearing Jerry curls. That just came to me, Brother Marvin. They were wearing the Jerry curl hairstyle. Everybody was trying to be, at that time, the word was called fly. They were trying to be fly, you know. Matter of fact, there was a brother I used to kind of be with sometimes who I met from Cincinnati, called him Fly Troy. He had gold in his mouth, gold chains around his neck, and he had a Jerry curl dripping on his shoulders, man. And that was kind of strange for me after coming through and falling into Ohio with a, you know, big, gigantic afro and coming away from reading Muammar Gaddafi's Green Book, reading Mao Zedong's Red Book, and reading Seeds of Time by Bobby Seale, and studying Angela Davis's works and those kinds of things. So to see that, it was almost like a clash of cultures for me. But that's what I found when I went to Cincinnati, Ohio. And also going into Cincinnati in the graduate school, there were very few black people in the graduate school at the University of Cincinnati. And I also recall being way right around the corner from a big black high school called Hughes High School, and that's where the young fighter who was popular at the time, you might remember him, Brother George might remember him, brother named Aaron Pryor, I think Pryor is deceased now, but he was a tough middleweight, I think it was middleweight or welterweight boxer. Aaron Pryor was from Cincinnati. I remember hearing his name ringing at the time. And so it was quite an experience. And of course, living in Cincinnati, I lived directly across the street from the campus in a one bedroom efficiency type apartment. And we would also leave in Cincinnati sometimes, since there was a pipeline there at the University of Cincinnati from North Carolina Central University. Our professor, Dr. Theodore Spigner, was able to get scholarships for a lot of the students graduating in the Department of Geography from North Carolina Central University who were going to the University of Cincinnati. So there were already some brothers there from North Carolina who took me in and helped me out before I got my own place and that kind of thing. And so it was quite an experience there. And one thing that I recall vividly is going up to Xenia, Ohio. Xenia, X-E-N-I-A. Xenia, Ohio. That's a small town in Ohio. And there was a hurricane there in 1972 or 70. Yes, about 72. No, 73 or 74. There was a hurricane in Ohio, and that hurricane caused cows and sheep to be placed in trees. It was moving so fast and so devastating. And I recall going up to Xenia, Ohio, where the black colleges were destroyed after the hurricane, and seeing cows stuck in trees and sheep up in trees, because Xenia was a farming type area. But there were two well-known black colleges in Ohio: Wilberforce University, named after William Wilberforce, the white abolitionist, and then there was another black school across the street from Wilberforce University called Central State University. And I had friends who went to Central State. I had some friends who went to Wilberforce. As a matter of fact, Aaliyah's mother the singer, Aaliyah's mother, was a student at Wilberforce. I think she was at Wilberforce. And I think her brother, who became Aaliyah's producer, Barry Hankerson, was in school at one of those schools, either Wilberforce or Central State, because like I said, they were both there together. But Barry Hankerson eventually married Gladys Knight and became a movie producer when he produced a movie called Pipe Dreams. So they were in school at the same, they were in school in Xenia, Ohio, when I was at the University of Cincinnati. Aaliyah's mother and Aaliyah's uncle, and Aaliyah's uncle eventually, like I said, married Gladys Knight, and he also became the vice mayor of Detroit, Michigan, and he's living right now. As a matter of fact, his name came out a few times in the R. Kelly trial. The trial with R. Kelly, and that's another
Dr.
story.
Bruce,
but
tell us about your life.
I'm giving you some people that I've met, some people who happened to shape me and evolve my kind of thinking by meeting people like this. You see, so these people actually helped to shape me to become the kind of person I became by being in contact with these people. Now, also, another thing that I did when I was in Ohio was I visited the mosque. Coming out of Durham, North Carolina, I'd always gone to the Muhammad's temple, and when I went to the temple in Ohio, it was Temple Number 5, and Temple Number 5 was a very prominent temple at the time, and I mistakenly took a lot of the information that I learned at Temple Number 5, Brother Marvin, back to school at the University of Cincinnati, which was not taken too well. I was taking the teachings of Elijah Muhammad out of Temple Number 5 to the University of Cincinnati to my classes in graduate school.
Uh-oh.
And the graduate professors didn't take too kindly to that. But it was black knowledge, and I had come out of an environment of black consciousness in North Carolina, so that was with me, and so I gravitated towards anything at all that was black during that particular time. You see, so I had read How to Eat to Live by Elijah Muhammad, and in reading How to Eat to Live on a student's budget, I was eating one meal a day, which was the teachings in How to Eat to Live, Book 1 and Book 2, and that one meal was basically navy beans in the evening. I soaked the navy beans overnight and then have bean soup and navy beans with whole wheat bread the next day that would be cooking while I was in class at grad school. Then when I come out of class, I'd eat my bean soup, trying to be healthy and trying to be conscious at the same thing. So those are some of the kinds of things that were forming me at the time. Another thing that I'd like to refer to, too, is something that Dr. Maxwell said, and that is being close to your community and close to your people and never forgetting your culture. Some of the brothers and sisters who I met at the University of Cincinnati thought that I was not going to make it, that I would never graduate because I started to hang with the brothers on the street as opposed to hanging with the brothers in the classroom. I began to hang with the brothers in the bars, and there was a brother that would come by my house. His name was Stacy, who was a Creole from Louisiana. And what I did, and didn't know what I was doing at the time, but Stacy was very, very, very good at reciting toast from the African oral tradition. And I would sometimes buy him maybe a Ripple or some Valley High or some Boone's Farm wine and get him to recite those old school toasts. And when he recited those old school toasts, I was writing them down. And even today, I've done workshops on college campuses around the country on the African oral tradition and the origin of toast. And that particular lecture, seminar, workshop series I developed while I was a student in graduate school by getting information from this brother on the street, you see. So it reminds me of something that Ben Crump said when he was here in Durham, North Carolina, and that is that whatever knowledge and information that we have when we go to these white folk schools, even though they might be black schools, but they're still owned and operated by white people, the information that you get, you should take that information and take it back to your people in your community and use it to uplift your community. Don't just be around people who have the same knowledge and wisdom and understanding and information that you have. That's okay, too. But take that knowledge and information back to your own people in the same way that you take your other kinds of resources back to your own people. So that's what I was doing. And at the same time, in reading and studying Rudder Ray Moore, the comedian, that's something that he did back in California before he became a comedian. Talked to the brothers on the streets. He learned the signifying monkey and some of those things. But those workshops actually developed from me meeting some of the street brothers in Cincinnati, Ohio. Now, another very important part of my odyssey and my development was the library at the University of Cincinnati. I was overwhelmed when I saw the collection of books that they had at the University of Cincinnati in the library. Books that I heard about, books that I had never seen, but I tried to find, I could access those books, books about black people and black culture. They have a tremendous library, and the library, they had so many volumes of books that were related to black people. So I would go into the libraries. Sometimes I'd go in the evening after I'd eaten some bean soup. I'd go to the library and sit in the library, and rather than studying urban geography and systematic geography and studying cartography and some of the other things that we studied in geography, I would go into the library and go back into the stacks and pull books out and get me a little cubicle and sit there and read all night until the library closed. As a matter of fact, I remember being in the library one night, and the librarian had to come into the library back in the stacks, and they were about to lock me up. They were about to lock me up in the library. I don't mean take me to jail, but the library was closing, and I was still in the library. And I think I heard a door lock or something that kind of woke me up, and I jumped up because they were about to lock me in the library overnight because I was there reading and studying all the time. You see, so
hey, Dr.
that was
Bruce,
very
can I jump in for a minute?
Yeah, come on,
what
come on.
What inspired you to spend so much time in the library, right? We had another call.
Good.
In one of the other parts of your series where the man said that he would see you in the library. So what inspired you to spend so much time in the library, even in your adolescence,
you know,
in your young years, but also in your adult years?
You know, Brother Marvin, that's a good question. I think I don't know what it is about me. I don't know if I can even answer your question or not, but I have always had a thirst for knowledge, always, even from the first grade, second grade, third grade, early on. And I think it came from the good feeling that I would get when I would learn some new information and be able to incorporate it into my life or to help other people with it. But I've always been inspired towards learning and knowledge, and maybe that's, some people may just be built that way and some are not, and I think, Brother Marvin, it came from the fact that I realized in the second, third, fourth grade, I realized when I saw those books that we had that were hand-me-down books from the white schools, hand-me-down books from the white schools across town where the children had written in the books, and then they give them to us in the black school and let us use them. And I realized that that wasn't right, that something was wrong with that. So I always was fascinated by Grimm's fairy tales, so I went to the library in MacDougall Terrace or the projects where I grew up. I read Grimm's fairy tales. I read Aesop's fables. I read The Fox and the Wolf, and I read all these stories, Hansel and Gretel, and not really knowing all the background and all about the misogyny and all about the homosexuality in some of those stories and those kinds of things. I didn't know about that because I've realized since that time they were deep. Those stories are a little more than what we see on the surface when we read Cinderella and those kinds of things. But I was always fascinated, Brother Marvin, with knowledge and learning. Always have been. And so even today when I travel, and I'm jumping up a little bit, but later on after finishing graduate school and going back to graduate school again and opening my bookstore, I would go to different cities in this country and sell books at festivals and at book fairs and those kinds of things. But whenever I would do that, I would always have three, four, sometimes four other people with me, helping me with the book sales, helping me load and unload, that kind of thing. Whenever I hit a town, whatever that town might have been, if there was any kind of black culture in that town, I would want to go and partake of that black culture. For example, when I went to Washington, D.C. one time, I had heard about the Pyramid Bookstore. I had never been to the Pyramid Bookstore, but I went to the Pyramid Bookstore. I went down on Georgia Avenue, went to the Blue Nile Cultural Center on Georgia Avenue, went to Howard University. I took my crew to see these kinds of things whenever I went out of town. When I went to Detroit to sell books at the African American Cultural Festival, and I'm jumping up a little bit now, but we'll get back. But I went to Motown. I saw the little piano where My Girl was composed and where the Funk Brothers sat and those kind of things. I took my crew there to see that. So these are some of the kinds of things I would always do. When I went to Jacksonville, Florida, I went to the Clinzel Brown Park and the museum there in Jacksonville, Florida, Dr. Maxwell's hometown. So whatever I have done, Brother Marvin, in my whole life, it has always been about the accumulation of knowledge and trying to give that knowledge back to our people and to wake our people up. I don't know why. I hope I answered your question, but that's just what I've always done that. And from a child, from a very, 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 very early age. And I also remember almost getting put out of class in graduate school at the University of Cincinnati. As I go back, there was a white, obviously racist professor who made a statement about black people, and I was, I guess, maybe 24, 25 years of age in graduate school. The professor's probably about 55, 60 years old, and she made a statement. I don't remember what the statement was, but I remember questioning that statement and being the only black student in the class of about 12 students, graduate classes being small. I was the only black student in the class, and I questioned that professor. And I didn't have all my facts together, but I knew it wasn't right. And I think the professor was intimidated because I'm sitting in the class, you know, she knew, she's seen me several times, of course. But I'm sitting in the class, 6 feet six tall, you know, big afro, dark green shades, glasses, and I questioned it. And so she just had to let the class go. She couldn't answer my question because I called her racist right in the class. And I thought that I was going to be put out of class at the time. But a committee was formed to discuss whether or not they were going to allow me to stay in the graduate school, and they thought that it might have been better to keep me in graduate school than to suffer the repercussions from some of the other black students who were on campus at the time who would have heard about it and would have caused some problems, because that's the way it was at that time. People were activist-oriented, and we were activist-oriented. We were oriented to be activists. During that time period that I was in graduate school, like I say, it was in the early 70s. And another very important part of my travels around the city of Cincinnati is during the summers, I didn't come back home to Durham, North Carolina. I went to stayed in Cincinnati and got a job working for the neighborhood youth corps, and where I supervised about 15 or 20 high school young men, high school brothers, and we would go around the city and cut grass. We wear hard helmets and steel-toed shoes, and we had our sickles and had lawnmowers, and I would drive the truck, and I was supervising, and we would go to different parts of the city of Cincinnati, cutting the weeds down and those kinds of things. And that was very good, too, because I got a chance again, I got a chance to do some teaching and some preaching and to talk to the young brothers who were part of my crew for the Neighborhood Youth Corps in Cincinnati, Ohio, you see. So I'm glad you asked me that question, but that's one thing I've always tried to do. And I can even recall, as I begin to conclude for today, I can recall being on a panel discussion when I was teaching at North Carolina Central University. The panel discussion was about drugs, and rather than talk about heroin, or rather than talk about marijuana, or rather than talk about some other barbiturates or whatever, I didn't talk about drugs when the panel discussion, when the panel discussion came to my turn. Each of the four members of the panel had 10 minutes. So when it came to me for my 10 minutes, I didn't talk about the physical drugs of alcohol or the physical drug of heroin. I talked about cocaine. I talked about the drug in our minds. I talked about the fact that we have been drugged, that we have been drugged is, of course, the past tense of drag. We've been drugged down by our mentality. We are taught and we are drugged to think that we have to put up a Christmas tree every year in December. We're drugged to think that we have to follow each and everything that this society offers us, you see. But when you are free from drugs, or when your mind is free, and when you don't feel guilty about not having a turkey on Thanksgiving, when you don't feel guilty about not having Peter Rabbit hopping down the bunny trail, when you can go through these days and go through this system, and when you can withdraw from some of these things that we've been taught and get them out of your mind, then you're drug free. But many of us are living today. We might not be on a physical drug. We might not smoke reefer. We might not use cocaine or crack. But many of us we're drugged by religion. We're drugged sometimes by All thinking right. that we have to have it, you see. So I have always, Brother Marvin, Brother George, always been a drug buster, trying to let people know that they don't have to be dependent upon the mind debilitating kinds of thinking that we have been given as a people. We can break away from that and become free thinkers and think on our own. We know that you've been taught that civilization started in Greece. We understand that. But when we begin to study and do the research, we'll find that there were African civilizations that existed long before Greece and Rome, and that there were African civilizations All right. that had built great societies, you see, when we get away from the drug. And that was a drug. And you can see it's a drug because when you go into any humanities class, as I used to go into when I taught at North Carolina Central University, when people would talk about the origin of anything, the answer from the whole class, and myself included until I learned better, was Greece. Greece is considered the origins or the beginnings of so-called, quote-unquote, civilization. But some people now have a hard time understanding that that's not true. Some people have a hard time sometimes asking questions about things that we've heard in the scripture. We have problems with these things. It's because we have been given a drug that has caused us to be dependent upon certain kinds of thinking, and until we can begin to think for ourselves and to break away and to break away from our traditions, break away from many of the things that we were taught as children, break away from some of these Eurocentric customs, until then we will never be free people. We'll be able to go to work, and we'll be able to shoot a basketball. We'll be able to be like Ja Morant and show guns on Instagram. We'll be able to run the football like Jim Brown did. We'll be able to do all those things, and we'll make a lot of money, but we will still not be a free people until we free our minds and free our thinking. Back to you, Brother Marvin.
Amen, amen, Dr. Bruce. And that is the anti-drug that we need, right? That is the serum, right? That is the antidote. It's that knowledge that you talked about. It's that information, right? It's the reading, right? It's the understanding, right? It is going beyond what we've been taught and being able to now transcend that foundation that they've given us to go back to our roots. So thank you, Dr. Bruce, for that. Thank you for sharing your story. Great, great information. And we're going to go to the lines now. First,
and thank
today,
you, and thank
mind.
You, Brother Marvin, because you said I am always guilty of it. I'll talk about everybody else except myself. And thank you for giving me. I was like a train going down the track, and I had gotten off track because, see, there's so much, brother. I've met so many people. I've learned so much. I've been exposed to so many things, and you know, you bring it out of me, and sometimes I get off track. So thank you for getting me back on track.
All right. I'm gonna try to get one slider in real quick, and then we'll go to the lines. Why is the knowledge so important, Dr. Bruce? Why is this knowledge so important?
Well, I think I just answered that. The knowledge is important, and you did too. The knowledge is so important because that knowledge will cause us to become a free-thinking people. Without knowledge, you can't become a free-thinking man or woman. You'll just be... And you see, when we look at the meaning, we look at education, and we look at training. There's a difference between education and training. Most of us have been trained, and when you look at the word training, the base or the root of that word training is train. And what is a train? A train is a programmed, mechanized, automatized piece of equipment. Where you know its origins and you know its destination. You know it's going to go around the same track all the time, and it's not going to deviate. It's not going to transgress. It's not going to go against that track that has been laid out by human beings for it to follow. But the human being should not be trained like that. He should be able to think for himself and to go east or go west and use his own mind or do what's best or beneficial for self. And you see, that's what training is. So most of us are trained as people, you see, but we have to become self-thinkers. So that's what the knowledge does. The knowledge allows you to do that, because if you don't have knowledge, you don't know how, and you don't have any alternative. That's the main thing right there. When you don't have knowledge, the caller mentioned something about knowledge. Let's say, for example, something's coming up. What's coming up next? The 4th of July is coming up in the United States of America. People are going to be popping firecrackers and shooting fire bombs and sparkles and all kinds of things up in the air, shooting their guns and shooting the AK-47s, all kinds of things for July the 4th. But if you don't have knowledge and know, as Bob Marley says, who you are and where you stand in the struggle, you'll think that you're supposed to be doing the same thing that Europeans were doing during the 4th of July. You have to know where you fit. You look at the date, July 4th, 1776. Where were you in 1776? Most of us were on plantations in South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Virginia. We were on plantations. So that festivity, that time of festive time was not for us, but it was for white people who were becoming free from the shackles of England, you see. But if you don't have the knowledge, you just go right on with what you've been taught, and you go like I used to do too when I didn't have the knowledge. I used to go down to South Carolina, one state down from North Carolina, because you could buy fireworks in South Carolina, and you still can. There's no law against them selling fireworks. North Carolina, they don't sell fireworks. We used to go to South Carolina and buy them and come back to North Carolina and sell them in the neighborhood, sell five packs of firecrackers, packs of cherry bombs, sell some sparkles, because you could get them in South Carolina and the 4th of July. But if you don't have the knowledge, Brother Marvin, when you don't have the knowledge, call asked about knowledge, why is the knowledge important? The knowledge is important so you can take your knowledge that you have, that you've researched, that you've thought through, that you've critically analyzed, you've synthesized, that you have worked out in your own mind, and then you can put it up against what our slave masters and our oppressors have given us when you have the knowledge. But if all you have is what they have given you, what we've gotten in the first through the 12th grade and 4 and 6 and 8 years of college, if that's all you have, what they have given you, then you have nothing to put up against it. So this program is important because we're giving you an alternative and giving you another way, another dose of information that you can put against July the 4th. I'm going to sometime soon, I don't know when, but some information you can put up against Halloween. Where did it come from? Where were you doing Halloween? What does it mean? See, we weren't taught all this. We have been, as some people say, what? go along to get along, or get along to go along, however it goes. That's what we've been taught. But you see, when you have knowledge, then you can ask questions. But if you have no knowledge, you just go right along, you see. So I don't want to do a lecture on the importance of knowledge, but anyway, that's what it was.
We could take one. We had to get there. Okay, so real quick, because you know I like when you put these get to the root words. Can you give us the root of education?
All right, right. Education comes from two Latin words, the word ducere, D-U-C-E-R-E, ducere. You see that in education. Or the word which means to lead, ducere, from which you get the word duck, D-U-C-T, education, D-U-C-A, ducation, that when we talk about water, we have, when people build, we have what we call aqueducts. Aqueduct leads water. Duck means lead. You have a conductor on the train to lead. You have so that means to lead. That word part, ducere or ducere, means to lead. And E means out of or exit. So education means to lead you out of somebody else thinking for you and you thinking for yourself. The ducere means to lead. The E comes from the word like exit or out of. So we have education, to lead you out of somebody else thinking for you and for you thinking for yourself, you see. So we want to run some ducks here, some D-U-C-C, so what we're trying to do here on this program is to lead people into thinking for themselves, Brother Marvin, education.
I like that.
Since you mentioned it too, there's a good book that really got me started on word origins, because I got another good friend who called me last week, and he said, I like it when you're on the program, when you go into the etymology of these words, brother by the name of Randy King. Randy said to me, he said, I like it when you break those words down, and you just made me think about it, Brother Marvin, too. This goes right back to my topic about myself. I met a brother by the name of Yusef Salim in Durham, North Carolina. Yusef Salim was a musician, tremendous keyboard player, played for Billie Holiday and some other people. He's now deceased. He also was a wordsmith. He loved studying words. So he turned me on to a book, Brother Yusef did, and this book kind of changed the way I think, the way I talk, the way I teach, the way I express myself. He turned me on to a book called The Dictionary of Word Origins. The Dictionary of Word Origins by a man by the name of Shipley, J-H, the initials, I think, J-H Shipley, S-H-I-P-L-E-Y, Dictionary of Word Origins by J-H Shipley. And I started to read that book and turned a lot of other people onto that book, and it kind of changed your thinking and let you know what you're really talking about when you go into the origin of the words, you see. And just briefly before we take another call, you made me think about, I mentioned Halloween. When we look at Halloween, we have to look at the Druids up in Ireland, the black people in Ireland who were Druids, which is another lecture. We don't have time to get into the Druids now in that history. But these Druids, the people who built Stonehenge, but they had a holiday called Samhain, and I'm going to spell that word, S-A-M-A-H-E-I-N, I think it's called Samhain. Samhain. And Samhain is something that has something to do with devil worship or witchcraft or something like that. But the point I want to make is when there was a program on television called Bewitched, those who saw that program called Bewitched, you know, she could twiggle her nose sometimes and make things happen. And if you recall her name was Samantha. And I didn't know at the time, but after I got going back again to the other question, the importance of knowledge, when I was able to get the knowledge of words and word origins, when you look at the word Samantha, they named her Samantha because Samantha is associated with that word or that holiday. That's what it was, a holiday or festival that the Druids celebrated called Samhain. I may have spelled it wrong, wow. Samhain, but it's the same as Samantha. So it has to do with witches and working spells and some of those kinds of things. So they call the witch Samantha, you see. So there again is another example of what knowledge can do for you. It can make you understand things better. Watching a program the other night, I'm going to get off this program and go to another line, but watching something else, just to give you another example, I was watching the program, and the program it was called The Maverick Queen, And in The Maverick Queen, this lady was telling some of these cowboys that they shouldn't rob banks and break into stores like those black Irish. And this came out in the movie. I jumped up. I said, Black Irish. I rewound it. She mentioned the Black Irish. And I've been studying the Black Irish. And the Black Irish were you and my people who were in Ireland and Scotland. And they were talking about the Black Irish on this old Western movie. But, again, hints are always given. And Brother Kebelon, I think, did a good job at showing how hints and words are given in all these things that we see, and it has a much deeper meaning when you have the knowledge. You look at the colors when you go into a restaurant, McDonald's, Wendy's, look at Bojangles. They use orange and they use yellow, and they use colors like this because they have done research to find out that these colors stimulate the hunger desires in the human being and make you want to eat something. So when you see those golden arches, you want to pull in and get a Big Mac, you see, or you want to get a Char-Broiled Burger at Burger King, you see, because all of them use colors. Shrewd manipulators of society have studied and have found how to trigger, that's the word I want to use, to trigger the desires in the human being. And they have done that, and we follow those desires because we have no knowledge and we don't really know what's going on. And one other thing that I'm going to be quiet, I have to give credit at this point for this kind of thinking and delving into things and studying colors and studying numbers and those kinds of things and studying homonyms and synonyms and looking at the fact that they claim homonyms are different, but they're not really different. Warif Dean Muhammad was a good teacher when it came to certain things. I'm not saying I agree with him in everything, maybe not most things, but no matter who our teachers are, no matter who our preachers are, we have to be like the cactus out in the desert. We have to grab as much water, as much knowledge as we possibly can, since we're bring it to ourselves and use it, because we just have not been taught. We have not been taught. So anybody who's teaching and speaking, you might not agree with them totally, but listen to them. I used to, going back to my odyssey, I used to require my classes to go to programs in the auditorium. I said, even if it's a white speaker speaking, if it's a black speaker that you don't care anything about or that you don't know about or that you don't expect to get anything, but most times even some part of the apple might be good, even though it might be rotten. Cut rotten part out and go ahead and eat it and then enjoy that part, you see. So I wanted to just holler out to Warif Dean Muhammad for that, because I'm very eclectic in my thinking. And when I say eclectic, that word means to gather from a lot of sources. I've studied a lot of teachers, a lot of academicians. I've studied a lot of scholars, white, black, all around, and I've taken that and tried to bring it into something that I can use to benefit our people. And I just wanted to do a shout out to brothers gone to the ancestors now, brother Warif Dean Muhammad. Okay, what we got on the line, brother?
All right.
You got to stop me, man. You got to stop me.
No, that's all right. We want to hear you. That's what we got you here for. Our resident scholar today, Dr. Bruce, in part five of his story. I got one more slide-o. It says, and I want you to answer this. My cousin asked his fiance, do we take this money and put it into a house or a ring? Here's the question. How do we move to making the right choices? How do we move to making the right choices, Dr. Bruce?
I think what we have to do is take stack up whatever it is we're choosing. A choice means to choose among or between. And when we begin to choose among or between something, we need to stack them or stack it beside whatever it is you're trying to choose, and just put it on the scale. Put it on the scale of Tahuta. Put it on the scale and weigh it out and see which makes more sense. Does it make more sense to do this, or does it make more sense to do that? And see which one is more beneficial to you, your family, or your people, or whoever you're making the choice, and just decide right then what should we do. Should we go ahead and buy some new clothes, or should we invest in a piece of land that we have found that we could invest in? And I was reading something too, which is another subject. But anyway, something from William Buffett, and he was talking about the kinds of people who actually benefit when you're spending money. You need to think about what you're spending your money on. Is it just for something quick, a quick piece of satisfaction, or is it something that will benefit you in the long run? You see, and what I say about it is, whatever it is, moderation. Just don't overdo it either way you go. Okay, Brother Mom, let's hear from
some
people. We got a few minutes.
Here's my wisdom.
I told you I was tired, but you invigorated me, my brother. You invigorated me.
We got to. If you invest in a rooster and a hen, you won't have to worry about buying eggs. How about that? Invest in a rooster
like
and a hen, and you won't have to worry about buying eggs. All right, let's go to the lines. 804-0121, you're up first on the Empowerment Saturday with Dr. Bruce. You have a question, comment, or statement. 0121, you're live. Talk to me, caller. All right, let's go on down to 0673. 0673 coming up on you.
Yeah, hey brother. I'm Joy Bruce. This is Brother Kevlon.
Yes, I know your voice, brother.
Yeah, I enjoy Bruce as well, right? I like to talk about balance on the scale, because I had a cousin who had $10,000, and the choice was to put that in a ring or put that in some land. You know what I mean? But I'm listening to Bruce, so like Bruce and others, they said, look up the research. Don't just take our word for granted. So I think Bruce might have said J.H. Shepherd. So I looked it up just in case people are looking it up with me, right?
What is it, Jay?
It's Joseph T. Shipley. Joseph T. Shipley. S-H-I-P-L-E-Y. Dictionary of Word
Origin.
I said J-H,
right. And you know what?
Yeah.
Thank you, Brother Akamalot. Thank you very much for being the scholar that you are, because, you know, man, Brother Marvin bring things out of me, and I hadn't thought about that book in 30 or 40 years. See, he's going taking me back. But the fact that I could even pull up the title of it and the last name and one of the initials, I guess that's doing pretty good. So
you get hard copy for $3. So there's no reason why those who listen to this program cannot get that book, because you get a hard copy for $3.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I'm on Libras.
Okay, Dictionary of Word
Origins. I'm on Libra, A-L-I-B-R-I-S, because I go with old books.
Right, J.P. Shipley. Okay. Thank you, Brother Bacabalo.
Right.
Thank you, brother.
There you have it. All right, again, give us that website, Bacabalo.
It's a Libras book, A-L-I-B-R, B like a boy, R-I-S, A-L-I. B-R-I-S. If you want old books, like they back to 1800, where they revised it, they have old books. So,
all right. Thank you, brother. Appreciate your call and your wisdom. All right. We got to get him back on, too, Dr. Bruce. All right. Let's go on over to 301-0316. 301. Last four is 0316. You're up next. You're live. Do you have a question, comment, or statement?
Hello.
0316. Welcome.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Hello?
Welcome to the show.
Yes. Okay. I'm a friend of Dr. Bridges. This is Dr. Shakur. I met Dr. Bridges back in 1973-74 at the University of Cincinnati. He has always been a gentleman and a scholar.
Oh, man.
And I can remember him studying vocabulary. Just sitting down studying vocabulary. He had some, either back then they were, as they call it now, what do they call, well, records. It was either on
you know what?
Or some
Sister,
kind of tape back in 1970s.
Sister Wahida, I had forgotten, before you go on, I'll let you finish, but I had forgotten about that. You see, that's why I tell Brother Mike, y'all help me out, see, get me on track, and I forgot I had a whole set of albums where it was a vocabulary albums. That's right, tapes or something. I think tapes or albums or something, but they would
I
give you the word.
Albums.
Right. They would give you the word, the part of speech, and then they would use it in a sentence, and they pronounce it for you. And I memorized those albums, my vocabulary. Really, I don't use it like I should. But, yeah, okay, go ahead, sister.
Yeah, I was just saying I remember you're doing that. And so you have always been a scholar. You've always been searching for information and knowledge, and you've always passed it on. Okay, you encouraged me at that time to study and to learn, and I also was a member of, back then was Temple Number 5 in Cincinnati, and I do remember you encouraging me to follow that line of study. So I just wanted to say, you know, he's been that way all his life, and he's helped people all of his life. He's given and given and given, and we all thank you for it. So that's all I have to say.
Thank you, sister. Thank you. Keep listening.
Thank you very much for that call. Right. Thank you.
All right. There it
That's
is.
That's quite a humbling.
Right. Knowledge is power. Right. And see, here's the thing about the empowerment, right? It's education, right? And I think we have to inspire our young people to want to learn. That's how you grow. That's how you get better. It's education, right? And we have to push education and challenge our people to learn and grow. Right, to become not only just average, but become our best self and then exceed that. All right, let's go back to the lines. 5416, 5416, 804, last four, 5416. You have a question, comment for Dr. Bruce.
Yeah, my comment is he's brilliant. Every Saturday I turn in and I listen to this brother give his insights, man. It's like being in school and taking a class, and just it's a wealth of knowledge, and I'm amazed that you could have such information from his brother, could share the information. He should be making millions of dollars with the knowledge that he has. I know what the system is, but it's just a wealth of knowledge that he's given. And it's inspiring to just hear this discussion every Saturday. Thank you for your show. Thank you for the people that you have on here, man. It's a blessing. Every time I get a chance to tell somebody about it, I'm like, yes, you need to tune in on Saturday and get this knowledge, because it's all positive. It's all good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Brother John. We appreciate you. And Dr. Bruce, Brother John was in the library when you came to Richmond. Yeah, right. He was right in there. So thank you, Brother John, for joining in.
Okay, I didn't know his voice and didn't. Right. Okay, because you had a nice little turnout that Saturday.
Yeah.
So okay, thank you, Brother John. I really appreciate that comment.
Yeah.
I'm glad to know that, because I wonder sometimes if people are really getting anything from what I have to say. Sometimes I question it. I say, are they getting anything out of this? Am I wasting my time and their time? So Brother John, people like that keep me going.
All right, Brother John, let me bring you back real quick. Brother John,
I'm here.
All right,
brother.
So answer that question for Dr. Bruce, because he questions sometimes whether people are listening. Tell him what you think and sometimes what you tell me about the show.
I have never heard him speak without being inspired. I mean, it's just so fantastic, a wealth of knowledge. I mean, he really needs to have, you know, a situation where he could, no disrespect to you, Marvin, but where he needs to be paid. You know what you get? You know, the benefit that he's giving away,
mm-hmm.
his wealth of knowledge is just unreal, man. He really needs to tour and get and share this.
Mm-hmm.
If there's any way we could put this into a school system or a system where the youth could appreciate or understand, they may not appreciate it, but sometimes they just have to expose you to this. This is the
mm-hmm.
type of what he says to us, what he shares to us every Saturday, the type of stuff that the youth of this day needs to be exposed to. And they don't have to be, as he said, they don't have to be drugged into it. They don't have to be set down. They don't have to be set down and say, give me an hour. Give me an hour and a half. And just listen. And if they're not cutting, I wonder what's wrong with them. Because this knowledge that you're saying that you could ever recite, it's a wealth of knowledge that any, not just you, some older individuals need to appreciate this as well.
Mm-hmm.
I, as one,
mm-hmm.
you know, I'm a, I hate to say learned, but I've got more than the average knowledge, and it stimulates me every Saturday I hear it.
All right. Thank you, Brother John. There you go, Dr. Bruce. All right, let's go on over to let me clear the line real quick. Okay, let's go on over to 9282. Brother Booker, to get back to you.
Yes, sir, brother.
You have a question, comment, or statement?
My statement, Dr. Bruce, as always, you know, it's great to be here, someone that you can relate to and on the same page, to see that when I use the word see, I'm saying understand, like and with that, I'm going to say what I started earlier about Ms. Nylasia Christian, who commented on something I put on Facebook last week. When nobody else did, she did. And the title of what I put on Facebook was, "How Do I Get Out of Hell?" And I went on and did my thing on it. And then she responded, "I can see that God is doing a work on you. And I pray that He shows you Himself clearly and what our whole lives mean. I can see so much from your post, and the Lord is answering prayers. Everything will make clear sense soon. Keep searching, because the truth is in you. I can see the glory almost there. I love you." And Dr. Bruce, that's what, like I said earlier, we're not looking for accolades or for anybody to agree with us and so forth. You just want to know. It just feels good to know sometimes that people are understanding, are seeing what you're saying. And that, because you tend to feel alone sometimes. You know, like Dr. Bruce just said, am I just, you know, and we like to say sometimes, preaching to the choir, or am I nobody listening? But they are listening. They may not comment, they may not call, they may not, you know, participate and so forth, but they are listening. And I agree, some point we're going to need to show ourselves. Some point. We all gonna need to come together with this message. We all gonna need to put the message into action. We gonna need to reflect it, and that is finding the God in you. Find that knowledge, that wisdom, that understanding, that greatness that we're looking for. Find it first in yourself.
All
Let's
right.
turn this
Thank
hell
you, brother.
Into heaven. Thank you, brothers.
Thank you, brother.
Peace
Appreciate
as
it. All right. Peace and blessings, Dr. Bruce. Great show. Final comments as we wrap up your series on talking about your life. What do you have as final comments for our listeners for this week?
My final comment is quite simple, Brother Marvin and Brother George. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Have no fear for atomic energy, for none of that can stop the time. How long shall we kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Some say it's just a part of it, but we've got to fulfill the book.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Hughes. And again, thank you for such an inspiring show. We thank you. We thank you. We thank you. All right. Brother George, final comments.
Yes, sir. Years ago, Dr. Bridges made a tape called What They Never Told You in History Class. A lot of people would still pay money to get that tape because it was a wealth of information and a lot of what he talks about today, you know, defining words and defining different things like a deck of cards, chess pieces, all of that. It was very inspiring, brother. And thank you, Dr. Bridges, for all that you taught me and done for me over the years.
All right. That's it for today. Dr. Bruce, thank you, Brother George. Thank you, and thank you all for listening. All right, we can't do it without you, but we're going to put Dr. Bruce back on tour and on the map as we continue to go city to city.
building a web and a network of African-American empowerment. 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. Share the show with a friend. And always remember, become the best that you can be, the best example that you could be of African-American or a descendant of American slavery. It is a badge of honor. It's not a badge of discourage. You now have the mantle in your hand. Stand tall, chin up, chest out, and let's be the best that we could be for our ancestors as we rise again. This is our Empowerment Saturday. Talk to y'all next week. Be strong, be powerful, be the best that you can be, and whatever you do, stay black. Peace and blessings. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah.